tomorrow it's the first anniversary of the Brexit referendum, a massive political earthquake. But are we any closer to knowing what Brexit will actually mean? Well, 2 weeks ago, it was polling day in the general election that Theresa May called, as we were saying a moment ago, to give her clear Brexit mandate, and that didn't really go according to plan. So have we any idea where we are now? Well, the SDLP MLA, Claire Hannah, is with us this morning. Morning to you, Claire.
Morning.
Good morning. And the former Labour MP, Tom Harris. Morning, Tom.
Good morning, Stephen.
Where are we now with Brexit, Claire? Is it going to be hard or soft or spongy
or
what?
You're right in that we don't know. And I think it was on your programme and others, and you debated this issue in the weeks and months before. And a lot of the questions we asked there, for example, how can you have a soft border with differential trade agreements on either side of it? We still don't have answers. And as you say, Theresa May called the election to be about Brexit and then refused to talk about Brexit in it. So negotiations aren't, I think we've got a different spin on negotiations here, where it's kind of lots of posturing and missed deadlines. And then at the end, there's a bit of a fudge and London comes in with a big check. And that's not how it's going to be with the European Union. They're serious negotiators. So the chaos and disarray in British politics is worrying in that respect.
And how's it going to affect us, Tom, here?
Well, in Northern Ireland, you mean?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I mean, you forgive me, I'm not a huge expert on solutions in terms of maintaining the soft border between Northern Ireland and the Republic. But I think in the wider issue about people not knowing what shape it's going to take, I'm not clear why people say that, because we have a minority government. Okay, it doesn't have a majority, but it was elected on a very, very clear manifesto to come out of the single market, come out of the customs union, and those are the kind of, that's what most people mean by hard Brexit. Soft Brexit usually indicates staying in the single market, for example. So I don't think there's any doubt really in what the government actually wants to achieve. The big question is, will it be able to achieve it without a majority, with a devalued and discredited Prime Minister leading this minority government? But what the government wants to do, what it was elected to do, is pretty unambiguous. And even the Labour Party had in its manifesto a clear reference to leaving the single market. So there's no ambiguity about whether it's a hard or soft Brexit, if you want to use those terms.
What do you think, Claire, the general election told us about Brexit, though?
I don't know. You know, the phrase that people have spoken, now we just need to work out what they said. I agree, I think, with Tom in that I think a majority of people have endorsed parties in GB that are asking for a hard Brexit. But it still doesn't answer how that's actually going to happen and how the cake and eating it can be reconciled. And obviously, my interests are representing people here, and none of things like exiting the single market and the customs union will be a disaster here unless we have...
Why will it be a disaster?
Well, because we won't be able to trade freely with the Republic. People won't be able to cross the border. And obviously, that's not just an economic consequence. I mean, we've discussed this so many times, Stephen, you know why. That's not just an economic consequence.
But the EU might back special arrangements given the political situation here.
Yes, I think they might. But the sad thing is that we are relying at the moment on London and as I say, on the Conservative Party. Brussels will be watching. If Theresa May can't crack out a deal with 10 MPs in Northern Ireland, she's going to have difficulty with the 27 continuing member states. But we are relying on that overstretched and distracted and a Conservative government that hasn't had a clear plan to date. We're relying on them to shout for us because we have no continuing executive. And I think it's not just the case in the Brexit negotiation that, and yes, the parties here have all agreed some basic principles, but they are very, very vague. And it's not just a case of submitting those on day one. You know, this is a moving target at all times. So that's why it's particularly important that we have an executive here in Northern Ireland that's prepared to advocate for us.
Tom?
Yeah, I think let's go back to the question of the hard border again. I mean, I think, you know, where there's a political will, there will be a way. And the fact is, you have unanimity in Northern Ireland. You have unanimity in Ireland itself, the rest of Ireland.
But how?
Well, hold on a second. And what I'm saying is, if there is a political will, you've got the UK government, the Irish government, the Northern Ireland establishment as it is without there being a formal executive. And you've even got the EU, all of whom agree that a hard border would be a bad idea. Now, that's at least a start. I think, as Stephen says, there could well be special arrangements, you know, that are only for Ireland, not to be replicated anywhere else, because there is a recognition that the peace process is far too precious, far too valuable, and has been worked for too long to risk with a hard border. And I think most people understand that. I don't know exactly how it's going to happen. I hear all these talks about, you know, new technology being used. I've no idea what they're talking about in that respect. But I am optimistic that it can happen. But there's a wider, more important issue, which is if the people of the United Kingdom want to leave the EU, I don't think it would be possible to veto that on the basis of what's happening in Northern Ireland. You know, that is a clear democratic, well expressed by the people of the United Kingdom, by all the people of the United Kingdom. So therefore, we're just going to have to come up with a solution.
Well, I mean, one, and I'm not suggesting that Brexit would cease because of Northern Ireland, even though we voted to remain. But I'm sure all the parties in Britain and Ireland agree that we want better weather and we want poverty to end and other many things. It does mean that there's going to be a way to do it. And as regards as the clearly expressed will of the majority of people, like I say, Northern Ireland voted to remain, but 52% isn't something. I mean, we would support a second referendum because, quite simply, a referendum is a snapshot in time. And those who say, but the will of the people didn't stop on the 23rd of June. The people are entitled to change their mind, and the people are entitled to view the detail of how Brexit will affect their lives. So I think you can't just say the will
of the people. It's not going to happen, Claire, is it?
Well, you see, it very well mightn't, but you can't. Those people who say the will of the people on the 23rd of June, is that the last time that people get an opportunity to speak on this? It doesn't make any sense at all. And if Brexit in the terms that London either get or want, if Brexit in those terms makes people worse off, if people don't want that, do they just have to accept it because on the 23rd of June at that moment in time, based on a lot of information, they voted for it? Now, I'm not saying there will be another referendum. I think it's entirely logical and I think it's entirely fair. Obviously, I'd say we're trying to represent people here. Tom, it seems, is on board with the concept of special status.
Would you rule another referendum out, Tom?
Well, I would, but let me ask the question of people who did vote Remain and who feel strongly about Remain. If a year ago the figures had been the other way around, 52% Remain, would people in the Remain camp today, a year later, be saying, well, there should be another referendum because the democracy didn't end a year ago?
Yeah, yes.
And I totally understand, you know, I get all of that, and actually, having campaigned for a Leave vote, having voted Leave, I actually don't agree with referendums, and I don't think that EU referendum should even have been held, because I think it's a referendum, a constitutional referendum, should only ever be implemented to confirm what we already know about a big majority in favour of a particular
change. So you regret the referendum?
I was never in favour of the referendum. I thought David Cameron made a huge strategic mistake. But when he called
it, you were a prominent member of the Leave campaign.
Yes, oh, absolutely. And you know, once the referendum is called, you have to take a side. Of course you do. But what I'm saying is that in principle, I don't agree with referendums where both sides are rushing to 50.1%, because that creates division. Unless you've already got a clear will of the people that you want to confirm for a change, then I think referendums are incredibly divisive, as has been proved. But when you hold it, when you agree to hold it, I think it's perfectly legitimate for everyone. In fact, it's expected of everyone to take a side, and that's what I did.
I'm just looking at a press release here from Sinn Féin, where they are saying within this release that there are currently 65,916 Irish passport applications awaiting processing from here in Northern Ireland. And they say today's figures are startling but not entirely surprising when we consider the detrimental impact, says Sinn Féin, Brexit is having on Ireland and Irish people who wish to reaffirm and retain their Irish and EU citizenship, Claire.
Yeah, I mean, I think anybody who's a public representative won't be surprised, because I know the number of Irish passport applications I've signed over the last year has absolutely exploded. And people are pragmatic, and people are attached to European citizenship, and they're entitled to the fact that we are in a unique position here, where everybody here is entitled to continuing EU citizenship through an Irish passport. I think it's a very positive thing that people are signing them up. I do think it's disingenuous of anyone in that press release, doesn't do it, but it's been implied before, that all of those Remainers are suddenly United Irelanders. But I think it's clear that people are engaging with the practical implications of it, and many of those people want to maintain their access to Europe. And we're not rerunning it, and whether or not there should be another referendum, and let's have the first referendum again. But Tom is incorrect to say, that the Remain people would we have facilitated another conversation. The fact is, when Britain voted to enter the EU, the Brexiters needled and yapped and whined for a referendum to leave for 40 years without coming up with a coherent plan, without proving
right.
the case to leave.
Here's Alex and Lisburn.
The democratic process doesn't mean that people have to stop and stop talking about
okay.
it.
Okay, morning, Alex. Okay, Claire, morning to you. Tom, thank you. Morning to you as well. Morning, Alex. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to make 2 points. The talk of having a second referendum, it's quite clear Brussels don't want the UK to leave, for it's destabilising for the rest of the Union. Well, on the basis of that, look, if they think we're guaranteeing we're going to have a committing to a second referendum, you're not going to get a good deal. Because why would they give you a good deal if it's going to have to go to a referendum? They'll want a bad deal for Britain and it'll be rejected at a referendum. And then Brexit collapses. The other point to make is there's a lot of criticism of Theresa May saying, if we can't get a good deal, we'll have no deal. Well, to say we have to have a deal, as Labour did, it's like walking into a car showroom and saying, I'm going to have to buy a car here, come hell or high water. You're not going to get a bargain. Because the salesman knows, if he sets you out, you're committed to buying something.
Alex, thank you very much indeed.